PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me once again, starts to feel like you are 100% the regular on the show, is my friend James Miles, J-Man, for a lot of those who know his writing on THP. How are you, buddy?
I'm delightful and dandy today.
That is a lot of a lot right there. I'm glad to hear it. Are you playing any golf right now?
A lot of golf, trying to get ready for a little event called the Morgan Cup next week. So trying to get my house in order before I head out to Vegas.
A little event. It's kind of a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
For those who don't know, it's actually a pretty long-standing experience that has been in numerous areas, but it seems like the last it's getting a little bit anchored into that TPC Las Vegas experience, mm-hmm. which is super cool. It's a golf course we've both played before. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in that area, not to mention the golf course itself, which has, you know, obviously not should be on the front nine, because by the back nine, if you're playing bad, you might fall into it, but a pretty significant canyon that runs in between a couple of the holes, which is really, really cool. So you got to be getting excited about that. But I mean, you're the guy who, what is your round count this year up to, like 200, 300?
No, I think I'm at 211, 212 after today. I told you I was going to get to 250, and it's going to be close because we're getting to a point where the weather's going to turn on me.
It makes me really mad that I said 200 and then immediately in my head said, that's not enough to make it sound ridiculous. You got to double down on that, which is why I went to 300. I'm not even close to that. I'm still soft capped by gin. So, you know, screw them for the time being. Anyone from there can come on and chat with me about how ridiculous it is. But we won't go too deep into the weeds of that today. What I'd love to do, James, is circle back on a conversation that our good friend Dean and I had last week about an event that went on this past weekend.
Amazing.
Unpopular, low viewer count. No, like it's one of those like secondary, I think it's called the Riders Cup or something like that. Are you familiar?
Something up in Wisconsin. I heard we put a team in it every now and again.
Yeah. We didn't just put a team in it this time. We put a monster powerhouse of a unit, sent them over to Whistling Straits and let them showcase the pure talent that is United States golf right now, with a dominating 19-9 victory over the Europeans, which left with effectively their tails between their legs after, I would argue, two decades worth of them having the upper hand. What did you think, man? Because you are a Ryder Cup guy.
I'm very much a Ryder Cup guy. I think it should have been worse than 19. That should have been like 21.
You wanted it worse for sure.
It could have easily been 21 or 22, and then the conversation's even worse. But I mean, I think it broke the European team finally. They're old. They're really old, and maybe this will be the last time that I ever have to watch Poulter in a Ryder Cup, other than whenever he's the inevitable captain, which you know is coming. But yeah, no, I went into it very hesitant. I was one of those, I listened to you guys' show and I'm like, I'm way more negative than they are about this. And it worked out well, obviously, but I guess I'd just been burned so many years of hoping that we would be highly competitive or we wouldn't collapse. And Stricker's, to me, a very boring guy. And I'm like, oh, great, here we go. We have most of the top 10 on our team and it's not going to matter, but boy, it did matter.
Yeah, full credit to Dean, and I guess I had a little bit of involvement. We kind of predicted a couple of the pairings, the Spanish Armada or whatever we're calling the Rahm and Garcia pairing. We kind of saw the bromances budding on Team USA between, was it Xander and what's-his-face Patrick? And I think, and you know, obviously records being what they are, I think the most impressive pairing had to have been the Morikawa DJ pairing, which kind of quietly just violently dominated the other team. And was there a pairing that impressed you more than those two?
No, because like that was the DJ I've always wanted to see in the Ryder Cup. Like, it was just straight up dominance. And he takes a lot of crap for being DJ, but dude, that he's just it him and Colin together, for whatever reason, that just works. Of course, DJ, after, you know, going into day one, he'd said it. He's like, you know, Colin's like the best iron player on the planet, and I hit the ball far. And that's about what it was.
You know what? There's, so if any of you out there haven't watched the post-win press conference with Team USA, and you want to get a sense of what DJ's really like, the man had, most of the guys shook their champagne. I think he drank his whole bottle before getting in there, which, hey, all the power to you, bud. You've done what you needed to do. And you got this sort of like unplugged version of little bit loopy DJ that was so much fun. And he was still that, like, JB's been on the show enough times to make it, you know, his DJ voice, but he's so unremarkable in what he says during these things. But when you get him a little bit loopy, it's suddenly it's just gold every time. The responses to "Can you hang with the kids nowadays?" The little jabs he's making to the rest of the team while he's there, like JT leaning over his shoulder, laughing with Brooks while DJ's talking in front of him, or saying that, you know, DJ wanted to get 6 points, but only fell short with five. Like, you can tell that DJ has a personality that's, what's the word? Infectious for the guys. It's not like he needs to say a lot of things to really get them going. You could tell the way they were reacting to him in the post press conference that he was very much an anchor of that team.
Well, I mean, the irony of it is we've always been told by tour players that they love DJ. Yet it's the media and everybody else, you know, us sitting there watching the interviews and whatever else, that he's the most boring guy ever, or some of his backstory and everything else, which, yeah, it's true. Like, I think most people know his history, but the tour guys have always said he's fun to be around and he's a good dude to be around. And it kind of showed, but it cracks me up. He's the elder statesman at what, like 37? Is that what they said he is now?
Is he even that old?
I don't know. It was something in the 30s. I do know that, which is impressive.
It's scary to think, because he was a young guy when I was a young guy, and I don't know what that says about me just yet, but yeah, I've heard some stories in the industry where if you get DJ talking about the right things, you can get him like really intense about it. And those interviews after the rounds of golf where his goal for 4 hours to stay totally even keel, then is he going to go and show big emotion when he gets into the, you know, the press conference? Probably not. I would imagine if you did a press conference with me, or even had me record this podcast 5 minutes after I woke up from sleeping, I would sound a lot like DJ does. And it's not because I don't care. It's that I'm just not there for it. You know what I mean? No, so yeah. I appreciate that he answers in his way, but I think that's what's so entertaining about him. And I will put on record here, it's not that I'm a new DJ fan. I'm just kind of all in at this point. From what we saw, I hope he wins everything.
No, I mean, and you wear navy like DJ all the time, so that works too.
blue is a very safe color for my complexion, but I grew up on a polar ice cap. So,
no, DJ did a lot for me in terms of, like, this is, and some are going to are downplay it, and that's fine. But to me, this is like a legacy thing. Like, dude walked in and went 5-0. Didn't bat an eye, didn't flinch the entire time. There was never really any concern. Nothing was really close for him. It never felt close, at least, even though the coverage was atrocious. And at times I forgot guys were on the course. we can get in that if you want to, but no, it was a big deal for DJ. Like, I don't know. He quietly led. That's cool to see.
Yeah. First time in what, 40 something years where a guy went 5-0, at least on the US side. Just absolute dominance. And yeah, we can talk coverage a little bit. Are you ever going to buy a BMW?
Oh my gosh. They tried to pound it into your head that you just needed to go press buy or go to a car lot. And the commercials told me I need one.
Yeah.
I mean, it reminds me of, you remember the Rory commercial? Was it Omega?
Yeah.
Was it the Omega? Oh, that was the same way, that it was again and again and again and again and again. And this was
So on Sunday, Rolex did an hour-long uninterrupted coverage. And forgetting the part where it's Rolex, and that's not really in my wheelhouse. If it was anyone else, if it was like Coke or Pepsi. I would purely drink that based on the fact that they provided me with coverage that wasn't commercial laden. And it, I owe it to them at this point to go and do that. I think of a company that has like normal purchasing power style experience behind them. If any of those guys came back out next year and said, we'll just cover 4 hours or 2 hours each day, and we'll just have our logo uninterrupted. Dude, I would go buy a lot of that stuff.
It was the only time that the coverage was good because they had to show golf the entire time. Like they couldn't get away with like no commentary and picture in picture and stuff like that. It's just, gosh, it was bad. But, and the worst part is like knowing some of these guys that are on the course and matches that everyone's interested in, and they were just not going, they were not going to show it. They were not going to.
Well, I have a perfect segue into our next conversation, but I'm going to extend this one because there's other things I'd like to talk about in the coverage. I think one of the glaring misses done there was that you could not easily find Bryson's 417 yard drive that redefined what a par five looks like at Whistling Straits. Now I was actually watching the live stream feed through RyderCup.com, which was featuring that match. So I got to see it. I was like the only person on Twitter, I think, who actually got to see it because I refused to buy cable. But you saw that. And for all the things that golf is not, you have an opportunity to showcase just how remarkable what he's doing is, to go against these guys who wouldn't even consider taking that line. And you don't even televise it. What are we doing?
It's so frustrating because like you said, I am a Ryder Cup guy, and you can't tell me that we cannot at this day and age have even like DirecTV used to do it with the multiple views and the multiple channels and have cameramen everywhere. Like I just, it staggers me. And that was the common, that was the recurring theme on our live watching thread that we had going on THP. Everyone's that way. It's not like just an us thing. It, like everyone, and you get on Twitter and it was the same way. Everyone hated the coverage.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem, James, is the Masters has officially spoiled us.
This is
and
true.
And we know what it can be. And when it's not that, it's kind of like, why not? In this day and age, with the abilities that we have, I mean, and I said this, I would pay a decent amount of money, maybe not, you know, $100 a month, but I would pay a decent amount of money to watch uncommentated, just camera views of each green or following each pairing with the guys on there mic'd up talking to their caddies, with a disclaimer that says we are not liable for anything that comes out of these dudes' mouths.
if this hurts your feelings, just keep it to yourself.
I mean, everyone's going to lose all their sponsors. That's not my problem. But man, how good would that be, right?
No, yeah. And you're right. The Masters does spoil it. I mean, but of course they kill it. But I mean, this event's as prestigious. Like, it's just disappointing. But it worked out. Right. I mean, we got to see a lot of fireworks, especially the last day, even as things were getting decided, like these matches are just, they're going to blows. And the thing I love about it is the U.S. team is throwing haymakers, and the real favorite Patrick of the U.S. team has now stepped forward, and we can stop talking about that other Patrick forevermore.
Yeah. The guy who doesn't have a history built on questionable decisions and
how could you not come out of watching that and be a Patrick Cantlay fan now?
Yeah, true. Well, he didn't wear a hat, and that was alarming.
That was bad. But so. But I mean, he was kind of the DJ guy, right?
Yeah.
But he got into it and got fired up and performed.
I wonder if guys like Cantlay have done what they needed to do on tour now. They've hit kind of the depth that they were trying to achieve, and now they feel like they can lighten up a bit. Like he had these weird tangents about, and like truly honest feedback over the last couple weeks. And it seemed like each time he won, he got a little bit more confident in the room after and beginning to talk to the media. He was comparing the Ryder Cup to like reading books on gin and things like that. It's like, bro, you would have never said this a year ago. You would have just sat there and be like, hold on, let me just play and then we'll talk, you know?
Yeah, but it was that was the best part for me. Like the first, I watched him play and it was great and everything else. And I went back later that night after the house had gone to bed and watched the interviews that he did. And I'm like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, why have we not seen this? And it was great. And yeah, I mean, he's, I don't know, him between him and Colin, I don't know which one I was more impressed with.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the cool part, right? Because you have guys that have been anchors for a while in JT, Jordan, DJ, these big names that have been around for a long time already, which is kind of crazy to think of. But then you have these young guys who are just in a lot of ways better. And it's kind of crazy to think that a guy like JT or a guy like Jordan could be your weak point on a team of 12. And we're talking like rankings alone, which is unbelievably stacked.
How about Colin Morikawa being a Ryder Cup rookie? Oh, with two majors.
Yeah. 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 Shoffley with an Olympic gold under his belt. Like it's pretty storied at this point. And what I'm most excited about, obviously, is to see if they can continue this success in the next couple of years. Cause I had a blast rooting for the US.
Can I just say though, I hated it for Padraig. Like I'm a big Padraig Harrington fan, but that was a buzzsaw.
The
US team was either going to collapse or they were going to do exactly what they did.
But let's focus on Europe now for a little bit. First of all, I would sit there and listen to Shane Lowry talk all day long.
Yes.
He's got a killer accent. I mean, you have him commentate everyone's round for me. I will just listen. I don't care if it's terrible. I will listen. That's the one part. But yeah, they've got a lot of guys that are going to be departing. I mean, Westy said it best. He said, I don't expect to be on this team next time around. I'm 49 right now. And that's kind of like, you know, you're in your, the sun setting on your Ryder Cup experience. Mm-hmm. Credit to him for winning his last match. Super cool. You got guys like, Ian Poulter, who have been like a living, breathing Ryder Cup machine, you just can't defend him being on there anymore.
You know how much I love Poulter. I said,
no one does. I mean, you go over to the other side of the pond and maybe you got a chance of getting someone to like him,
you know what? As much as I don't like him, what did he do on singles day? He went out there and made putts and did all the Ian Poulter things that Ian Poulter does,
which is a great way to end it to me, right? You know, you think a guy like Poulter, he would be able to kind of anchor a couple of those other matches, but in reality, he just went out in singles and won. I mean, he won in a good, solid way, which is you kind of got to nod your cap and you know, appreciate what it was accomplished there. But how about Garcia? I mean, there are just enough guys there where you know they're going to have to make a change. Yep. And my question to you, James, is what do you think that change is going to be over the next couple of years? How's it going to look?
I was watching on, I was at my course and they had the Golf Channel on since I don't have cable anymore. And I was standing there and that was the big conversation. They were putting up all the PGA Tour rookies that are Euros that could be on the team next time. And there's some names in there that are intriguing. There's a couple of names that are in college that they're talking about next time could be on the team. But I mean, don't you think at this point they have to go young?
Yeah.
You can't halfway do it anymore. And it might be the last time we see a Sergio. And even as well as he played, I mean, I was watching it and there were times I was like, man, Sergio's just old.
Yeah. Well, there were also times where like Sergio is a blankety blank because he kept chipping in on the US, which is crazy. You know, Sergio doing Sergio things, but I think the challenge there is a couple things. First of all, it's brutal that they play as much golf as they do. And I think when you have the elder statesman playing, you definitely feel the need to protect them a little bit from a amount of golf standpoint. And you're just kind of limiting your options. But you know, full credit to a couple of those guys for coming out and doing their thing. I mean, Lowry's experience was hilarious. You know, watching him freak out on a putting green and then immediately apologize is pretty funny. I only caught a bit of the reviews, or the feedback and some of the video that gone on. So I was kind of catching up with it. But then once again, you go and watch the press conference and you're like, these guys are just flat out likable. You know, even Poulter had his moments in the press conference. He also had his other moments, but
yes,
he had moments where I was like, man, like it's so cool to hear these guys who have won their millions and made their presence known on multiple tours, but still come back and say, this is the grail of golfing experience, is to get on a Ryder Cup team and hopefully win. It's cool to hear.
Oh, it is. And it's, I mean, I didn't think that we would be this quick. We would see this quickly staring at the European team and going, I don't know what they're going to do. Because you look at the U.S. team and you're like, yeah, that whole team's coming back. So what do you do? And again, I feel bad for Podrick because he just happens to be the transitional guy. Like, it didn't matter what he did.
Yeah. So if there was one guy who you don't think will make it back on Team USA, could you pick him out right now?
No. I really don't think I could. I mean, maybe a Scottie Scheffler.
Really? What about Harris?
That's another one, because honestly, and you mentioned that and I forgot he was on the team.
Yeah. So, you know, he put a show on day one.
He did.
You know, it's interesting because there are a couple bubble guys there, and full credit to Stricker for making some challenging decisions to fill up the lineup. I thought the Finau pick was fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunate that Tony didn't quite have his day on Sunday, but no, I'm a huge Finau fan, so to see him get invested in that and him laughing during the press conference, they should have taken the mic out of his hands, because every 2 seconds it's just him laughing into a microphone. But you know, that'll be the challenge, is when you get 2 years down the road, what does this landscape look like? Because there's always going to be another young guy coming out and put on a show. Who knows what a guy like Matt Wolf can do?
That's what I was about to say. Yeah, because there's a few of these that have been dinged up or whatever that could very well push somebody out of a spot.
Yeah. Well, I love it, man. There's so many guys like that. The Champ, the Homa, that crowd of young players. You're going to say something?
Yes. I raised my hand for everybody listening at home.
Yeah. Cut me off.
I had one Euro that I have to mention. How about Victor Hovland?
Yeah. I was hoping we'd talk a little bit about him. You know, it's funny to see Vic in a condition where he's got both the smiley face of Victor on, but also like respectfully trying to be in the moment. It must have been hard for him, but I bet you he's going to be one of those guys that sticks around for a long time and finds ways to out Victor himself during Ryder Cups.
You know what was probably hard on him? The fact that he didn't have a teammate most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, it was all him. But it was cool to see, because I mean, I live just outside of Stillwater, so Victor's still here. And Victor is what you see on TV. Like, that dude is just happy. And it was cool to see him in that moment get to go out there and do that and put on a show. I mean, no, Sunday didn't end the way he wanted it to, but he had a chance at it. So
what do you think, buddy? Are you predicting a follow-up win here in Paris?
Should.
Is it Paris? Yeah. I'm saying it wrong. Is it Rome?
No, it's Rome. It's Rome.
Paris is the Olympics. That's right.
Yep. It's Rome. In Rome. So, I mean, I don't know. Yes, they should win, because yeah. I still don't know who the European team's going to be.
That's weird, though. How many Ryder Cups have we come past at this point where they should have won?
You know what I mean? 1,000.
Yeah, 1,000. Yeah. All right, so here's the tough question, and then we'll move on from the Ryder Cup. With how successful Stricker was, and it didn't sound like he was overwhelmed by the idea of coming back, but do you let him ride it out until he loses at this point?
I say run it back.
Yeah,
I do. Because what are your other options right now? What are, like, some of the things we had a conversation going on the THP forum about it, and people are throwing out like Zach Johnson is the next guy. And I like ZJ, but no, Phil. Well, Phil hasn't, you know, done a President's Cup or whatever yet, or been part of that. No, Tiger, not yet. I'd let Stricker do it. Like, obviously everybody responded to him, and as laid back as he is, everybody was everybody was emotionally tied to him.
What do you like, say? I don't like giving speeches. I hate it. Doesn't.
But hey, how about at the end of it? Whenever, you know, it was in Wisconsin, it's all those things, and he said it himself. He's like, I never won a major. This is my major.
Wait, isn't, like, he from Wisconsin? Was cool.
Yeah. He's a Wisconsin Hall of Fame everything guy. Like, they, yeah,
the joke there is, if you watched even 4 minutes of coverage, you'd have known that Steve Stricker is from Wisconsin.
from the first like 10 minutes of foot, like when the event started, the first 10 minutes, I'm pretty sure we heard that 3 times.
All right, quick question for you. Do you think team events should be more of a thing on tour and or co-ed events?
I want to see something co-eds, like a legitimate, not even a team co-ed event, like, but put some true focus on a co-ed event, because I think it could be very, very cool with the way that the ladies are right now and where their games are. Like, it could be fantastic TV.
I had a local buddy challenge me, I think a week ago, about the LPGA. And I said, LPGA is incredible to watch. I'd love to be able to watch more of it. And he said, oh, I don't want to watch that. I said, why not? He said, it's not impressive to me. And I said, when was the last time you sat down and watched an LPGA event? And he never did give me a legitimate answer. I said, you really need to. Their numbers are coming up. Their accuracy is off the charts. Their putting is amazing. The biggest critical hit on them is you have to be doing something else because they're impossibly slow. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, I say put the game with the guys and showcase their talent. We need to create an umbrella of these tours where they kind of feed off each other and really showcase the talent on both sides. And I think if you started to incorporate more of that, you would see some pretty cool collabs between the LPGA pros and the PGA Tour pros who are more into it. And you get these teams out there who might not win, but you are absolutely watching to see them succeed. I think that's something that's a little bit missing right now.
I agree. And I think it's something that could be done with the support of all sides. Like for all intents and purposes, all of the guys want to support the LPGA. I mean, the LPGA obviously wants the help that it can get, and they've done a great job of building what they're at right now, but it could be more, and it should be more. I've always said that though. And part of that's me being a high school girls coach too, with it all. It's that side of the game deserves to get more. But again, our coverage in general, like, you want coverage that's not very good. LPGA coverage is not very good. But
it doesn't exist.
Yeah. You know? Whenever it is on, it's like they don't know what they're doing. And like you said, then it becomes so slow by just focusing on the leaders because their pace is what it is.
Yeah.
There's gotta be a better way.
So let's focus on the crazy interesting event this week, which is the long drive competition. And this is that sort of crossover I wanted to do with Bryson, because he's been the focal point of distance chasing for over a year now. Mm-hmm. And it is at that. So he, first of all, everyone said he wouldn't be able to maintain it. He did. Second of all, and myself included, they said he won't be able to maintain his consistency. And when he doesn't, he's going to be a mess. And he proved that with the US Open win. This week, he's now competing in the World Long Drive. And if you haven't noticed, and James, I don't know how much you've actually had a chance to watch. I've been watching the live streams, but these guys flat out miss. And when you swing for the fences, I get it. You know, it's not a huge range. It's not a small range. It's not a huge range. But I mean, their goal is to get one out of what, six?
Six.
Online. And you see some of these guys out there missing. And these are highly rated or highly ranked guys on the tour, missing five out of six, six out of six.
Six out of six.
And meanwhile, Bryson is swinging like this or close to this in a PGA event and having mm-hmm. success. I mean, can we just take a minute to appreciate the things that he's accomplished trying to achieve distances like they are?
I was actually, before we recorded this, I was watching, he's in the round of 32 at that time, I believe. So they were going through the sessions and I was watching the live stream before we hopped on here. And I mean, Kyle Berkshire was actually commentating because he went in the morning. So they had Kyle on there, and you talk about a guy that's super well-spoken. He's obviously trying to play competitive golf, but he's talking about Bryson, and they're all amazed by Bryson because he's doing what they're doing, but he is, as Berkshire said, he's the greatest golfer to ever do long drive.
Mm-hmm. Well, world ranking of seven competing yeah. and effectively competing in long drive. He's not just like one and out.
Here's the crazy thing. Like, he's going to top eight. Unless yeah. something crazy happens, he's going to top eight and be in the final eight. And if the wind picks up, like, Bryson's going to probably top three Like it's, they were talking his ball speeds and his swing speeds. I want to say like the last set I watched, I think his first five swings in the set were 142.7.
Every he maxed out at like 148.
Yeah.
In his training.
Yeah.
So to get up there, and that's the one thing you do have to understand is Bryson. And when he was doing his speed training, he said he's trying to push himself to a point where when you reel it back to that 80 or 85%, then you're gaining your accuracy back and then you're gaining their control back, things like that. So you're not seeing him take these unbelievably massive cuts on tour where he's hitting it, you know, 400 in the air or anything like that. He's not getting 220 mile an hour ball speed, but he's at like 195.
I mean, a lot of what he's doing is that it's like that overspeed training, the super speed, and a lot of those programs. Now, obviously, he had a whole other physical aspect to it, right? I mean, we saw, I laughed and made fun of him forever calling him Bryson Beefcake. If you remember Cartman on South Park, whenever he was taking the weight trainer so long ago, yelling Beefcake, like that was Bryson. But did you notice at the Ryder Cup how much slimmed down he is?
Yeah, and
I was one that was trying to tell everybody, like, he was bulking to get big and strong. And this is what you do. You bulk and then you cut. And he's now cut. So he's got the strength, but he's now reframed his body again. And it's been cool to see. But his ability to hit golf shots is what Kyle Berkshire went on for about 10 minutes tonight whenever I was listening to it, because the wind had really picked up towards the end of his sessions and it was in their face. And Berkshire's the one that said it. He's like, look, if it does this, this plays into Bryson's hands, because Bryson can hit golf shots. Most of us can't hit golf shots.
Yeah, all they're like trying he's to gonna, do is swing out of their shoes.
Yeah, he's going to flight
and play it.
Yeah, he'll flight the ball, control the trajectory, and get the rollout. So it's cool, but I mean, they were also talking about how a lot of these guys who originate long drive, Pfister, all these guys are super pumped about Bryson, and like they want Bryson to go do this because it legitimizes what they're doing.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's made Bryson a heck of a lot more likable to me.
You know what's interesting is while this bridges a gap between long drive and competitive on-course golf, I think it also showcases how significant the differences are between the two. I mean, there's obviously validity in what these guys are doing, especially like I've watched, you know, 30 different golf swings try to achieve that 350 to 400, whatever the number they're chasing is. And not a lot of them are all that similar, and the guys are going about it in their own way. I mean, Berkshire's got his rock. They all do it in a unique way, you know, and to think about how hard that is, but then to focus on, well, distance is a scary thing. Like these guys can't really harness it in a way you want them to, but it's also kind of this imperfect brilliance that goes on that I never want to lose that. You know, and to see a guy like Bryson come out and dominate with his distance, I say let's friggin' celebrate it, man, because no one else is going to do it. And until it starts this ridiculous trend of, you know, gym rats coming out and flexing on a golf course, which isn't going to happen, until that occurs, I don't think we have anything to worry about. Because all these guys on tour right now are watching Bryson going, holy shit, but at the same time going, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, no way in hell.
Rory tried to do it and said it screwed up his golf game.
Yep.
You know, it's like they have to know.
Oh, yeah. It's but like I'm trying to think of how I want to phrase my words with it because there's so many thoughts that I've got on it. And you know me, I've not been the biggest Bryson fan, but like this past week has been huge for him in my eyes. Like this is the Bryson I want to see. The end of these sessions, the last two that I watched of him tonight, like he starts pumping up the crowd his last two swings. There's one of the other guys that's downrange from him in the same grouping trying to beat him out. And they're like talking crap to each other and smiling and laughing the whole time. After they finish, Bryson got in by a yard and like there's this big bro hug and whatever else. You could tell these guys, they all just legitimately love Bryson being out there. It could have been something of like animosity, like how dare this guy show up and say he can do what we do, which we've kind of seen. We've kind of seen the other way, haven't we? When some of these long drive guys have tried to go out there and play on mini tours or whatever else, there always seems to be this little bit of defensiveness to it from the tour guys. Whereas on this side of it, they're like, come on, man, this is awesome.
Yeah. Well, the other part is I think they know as well as we do, Bryson brings eyes to anything he goes, and that benefits long drive in a big way, not just long drives pocket, but their pocket as well. So I'm sure there's some motivation there, but at the same time, I think they're doing that because it's genuinely exciting. And I bet those guys are fanboying just as hard as we are at the opportunity to see what Bryson does. Do you think he gets top five? You think that happens?
I think he top fives.
Really?
Based on them talking about what the weather's supposed to do and the wind is supposed to blow, I think he does, because what was it? His very first set of the long drive thing, he put all six in play. Tonight, I think I saw him go 4 for 6, 5 for 6, and 5 for 6. Huh. Nobody else is doing that.
Right.
They're getting one or two.
Wow. That's pretty cool, man. I'm excited for him. I hope he does well. And I hope this whole process going through the Ryder Cup, giving people a reason to cheer for him. I really hope he won a lot of the fan base over, because it's just kind of that whole narrative is kind of tired at this point. I think he puts his foot in his mouth. We all do. I do it on this podcast at least once a week. I hope people can just embrace him and understand he's just a little quirky. We embraced all the stupid crap that Tiger did. You know, let's give Bryson a little bit of a cut here and, celebrate what he's doing for this game, because I think it's going to bring a lot of eyes to this sport, hopefully in the near future.
Everybody wins, right?
Well, I win. You win. Yeah. I'm having fun. I love watching it, man. I'll never forget the drive he hit. 417 yards. It's not a normal number, but I can remember it. And you better believe they're going to do something on that hole to make it Bryson proof, whether it's a bunker there or whatever it is, because when he goes back there, he might do it again.
Hey, do you want the craziest thing for the Ryder Cup? And this will be my last part of it.
Yeah.
I was reading before we got on here to do this, I was reading a thing. A guy placed an $8 bet.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
He won $966,000 on this $8 bet.
I can tell you it wasn't me. Because he
hit all the things. Yeah. How amazing is that?
And including the halves. Yeah, that's unbelievable. Could you imagine watching that putt? Who was it on the last hole who ended up splitting for the final point? Was that – it wasn't Shoffley. It was it Morikawa?
Maybe. I can't remember.
He missed like a four-footer on the last hole to split. Could you imagine this guy at home watching going, don't make it.
One of the first comments on one of the tweets I saw about it was Lee Westphal. was those guys. He's like, oh boy, I bet you he was worried when I was 2 down through 14 or whatever.
That's so funny. Well, we got to get on a couple little quick hitters because we've got some stuff to talk about. Number one, I might leave it till next week, but I will say aeration season is coming. Down the hatches. It is an emotional time for all of us. We'll probably talk about how much it sucks next week to putt on it because it's happening next week here. I don't want to go too much further into that, but I do want to talk about shaft swapping a little bit with you, because you're a bit of a shaft guy, and it's generous to say guy and not whore, because that's kind of your
golf
thing.
Golf shaft.
Golf shaft, sure, whatever. See, foot in the mouth once a week, guaranteed. I've been, and you know me, like same ball for forever. By the way, James is laughing. I'm basically looking away from the computer at this point. So I've used the same ball for forever. I've dabbled with other balls, but I come back to it. I'm a creature of habit, man. Golf ball. Relax. We can talk about how bad my putting mentally is right now, but we're not going to. We're going to focus on golf shafts tonight. Or I suppose today, since it's coming out on Friday. Quit trying to ruin my show, buddy. But I've gone back to the Tour V iron shafts, like always. And I do it because they work. But I have a couple options here, and I have a set of heads that I'm having so much fun with. They're a set of heads you played for a while. They're the JPX 921 Forged. Unbelievably fun set to hit. And right now, James, I am not hitting Tour Vs in there. Originally, I had some Recoil 95s until the 6-iron did a 180. After I hit a good shot with it. So kind of forced my hand. So we got some money tapers in there today, and it went pretty well. I have a couple questions. Okay. Number one, do you have a prediction on where I end?
Well, yeah, it's Tour V. I believe I told you that in a message like the other day.
You said
I agreed on the money tapers, and then you're like, well, they're two V's. I was like, well, just do that then, because it's always going to end up there. I think the money tapers are going to be pretty sweet in there, though. I really do. Those heads are fun.
Yeah, they did good today. Nice and stable, a little bit heavier of a shaft than I'm used to, but I kind of wanted to experiment there. And I was definitely pondering putting in some X100s, which I think is like, you know, whatever percentage of golfers go to is an S3 or an X1, you know, that it's what's in like everything for forever back mm-hmm. when you were 15, you know, playing golf. So yeah, I think I want to mess with that a little bit, but right now money tapers are super fun. Are you going through an iron golf shaft swap right now?
Yes, because I'm lazy and have not finished my club work. So I have Acker iSteels 125s in my 5, 7, 8 and pitching wedge. And then I have Elevate X100s in my 6 and my 9. Yeah.
So what's going to be the full setup come next week?
Probably, actually, you're going to laugh at this. The set that I just pulled out that I'm probably going to install into them, you know what they are?
They're not Tour Vs.
They're Tour Vs.
No way.
They're Tour Vs.
I was expecting, because you were toying around with Project X LZ for a while.
Yeah, and I considered moving a set of LZs from something else, but I really don't want to pull them out of those heads. I want to leave them right where they are because they've kind of been phenomenal.
And then
I've got some IOs, but
yeah,
I don't know. Honestly, in all truth, I'll probably switch out the other two to the iSteels, because I really do like the iSteels. They've been pretty fun. The feel is surprising to me, and the stability has been good enough for what I want to see, especially going in next week.
Well, I think before I wrap up my chase, I definitely want to try the Project Jax, the not the IOs, the LS. I'm mm-hmm. kind of excited about those. Just in 6.0s, I'm for whatever reason, I'm just not really jiving with the 6.5s anymore mentally. But I've always played Touri and stiff. You know, that's my mm-hmm. weird quirk. So yeah, we'll see where it lands. Do you have a prediction? You already said Tour Vs. How long do you think it'll take for me to move back into them?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. That's 1 week more than I figured you'd give.
Yeah,
me.
But if you guys are aerating next week, yeah. that gives you a week of excuses. So like the ball didn't pull back on the green like it's supposed to because it was aerated.
Yeah. You know what I want to do with you? I was in my pro shop earlier experiencing some new apparel I really touched. It was a lot of like outerwear-y, like quarter zips and even a hoodie, maybe a golf hoodie. Johnny O, are you familiar mm-hmm. with him?
I am familiar with Johnny O.
So I've been introduced to a lot of really nice, like I wouldn't say upper end because I've seen what some people pay for. I just saw what the US team would pay for their Ryder Cup apparel. Yeah. But like the Matt Grays, the straight downs, the Peter Millars, the like Turtleson, Johnny O, like those kind of upper end brands. And I'm Travis Matthews, a good example.
Yep.
I'm kind of getting super, super into it. So I want to have you back on in a couple weeks. Let's talk apparel, man, because we haven't done that yet on the show. And I really want to. I had been like an Adidas pant guy for forever. I wore some Travis Matthew pants that they hooked me up with earlier this year.
And they're awesome.
The last 2 days
they?
On the golf course, and they're unbelievable. I got compliments on my pants, which I never get. Like, stop looking at my pants, bro. But you know, the straight down, I've gotten into those. I really want to have a show where we chat about that. So do your research. I know you do a ton of that stuff, mm-hmm. especially for the programs at your schools. You're definitely in tune with it. So let's have a chat. And anyone out there who's interested or has a huge preference on their apparel, hit us up on social media at Off Course THP or myself, Canadan. What am I? Canadan Golf? Yeah, that's what it is.
You're asking me.
It's like Instagram, Canadan82. That's terrible. But James, this is the part of the episode that I sort of love, but sort of don't. Do you have any questions for me?
Who, after watching the Ryder Cup?
Dustin Johnson.
No, it can't be DJ because you've already, you've always loved DJ.
Okay.
Who, after watching the Ryder Cup, either team, actually give me one from both teams.
Brooks
Koepka. Who was your mind changed the most about in a positive way?
Brooks Koepka.
You came away positive about Brooks.
So I've come to terms with what Brooks is, and I just had a chat with that with someone about him today because he goes, what do you think of him? So I gave my honest opinion. I really think Brooks just likes to mess with people.
Yep.
I think he intentionally, and someone asked one of the first questions in the interview afterwards was, Brooks, did this experience change your perspective on how you value the Ryder Cup? And he said, I didn't see that. I didn't say that. You guys said that. He goes, all I said was it's different. I'm like, you little turd, you are 100% saying stuff to get people rattled and bothered. And I'll be honest with you, James, I don't hate it anymore. I need to accept that he's going to do that every time. And if you will, here's my biggest problem though with Brooks still. He can choose to do this and have plenty of fun with himself at home, reading the crazy comments that come on. But he could also be an unbelievable bridge between a certain type of person and the game of golf. And it's up to him. I don't know if it changes soon or what happens, whether he gets bored of just tormenting people mentally. When he makes that transition, I think he will become one of my preferred golfers because I think there's a lot of genuine validating interest in the game in him. And that includes me really wanting to see him wrap it up with a hole in one on 17. You could see he wanted it too.
Yep. Yeah. It was, I've always been a Brooks fan, but I've always taken him as just being that sarcastic smart aleck kid I had in my classes when I was still teaching.
Yeah.
That's going to needle no matter what. And just think, and then give you kind of a chuckle. I mean, think back to whenever he talked about, well, yeah, in majors, so-and-so half the field's already beaten and everything else. And everybody got upset about it. Well, his comment that he made there about, well, you guys are the ones that said that, it makes perfect sense. But now on the Euro side, who was your perspective changed the most about in a positive way? It's gotta be the big guy.
Well, okay. So I made a comment about Lowry, how he was doing like a couple weird things in the videos that I'd seen on social. It wasn't until I went back and watched his reaction and listened to him talk specifically in the super cool accent that he has. And I've heard incredible things, stories about Lowry and how fun he is to be around. I would like to experience him a bit more. I think he was very invested in the event. I think it was an emotional time for him. I think watching him get way too excited and then apologize for being way too excited at a Ryder Cup to his opponents was pretty funny. I will make a concession that I didn't see enough to have a real transitional perspective. I'm already really anchored on Garcia, who is actually one of the guys I saw the most of. So my perspective on him really isn't going to change. I saw what I saw. He did do a golf course, what he did to it. And I really can't forgive that just because I think deep down that is who he basically is. Mm-hmm. But I will say I paid really close attention to Jon Rahm. And I didn't come away negative with him. So
that's big for you.
Yeah. So I will clearly state that I was not a big fan of Rahm's. I call him the Rahm explosions or the whatever it is. Every week it seemed like I had an image of him just slamming a club down. And that pisses me off to see people do that on a golf course. But he's showcasing me, and I think it had a lot to do like the transition when he had a family. You could see that his perspective on a lot of things changed, and I really respect that. I think he's kind of coming into his own. He realizes there's a lot more than out there to be pissed off at than just golf, so maybe enjoy it a little bit. And I kind of felt bad for him this week because I'm imagining the pressure on him was substantial to the point where at the end of it he made a comment in the press conference of, if I can get back on the team again, hopefully we can do better. And everyone looked back at him, including Paul Casey, and was like, yeah, I think you're good, bro. So he's staying humble, and I think that's cool. It seemed genuine the way he said it. It wasn't arrogant. So between him and Hovland, I think, and Lowry, I think those are the guys I favored most from Europe.
Same.
Yeah. No way. Yeah, is there another guy from the U.S. you felt strongly about, or is that, do you feel?
I mean, like I said earlier, Cantlay was a big one for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just because the way he carried himself. But, and then Tony Finau, every time I watch him on TV, wins me over more.
Yeah. He's my guy.
You know who else won me over?
Who's that?
Patrick Reed sitting at home.
Burn. Any other questions for me, big man?
That's all I got, man.
All right, buddy. Hey, it was super fun as always. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Just kind of kicking back, talking about the Ryder Cup, the huge win for the U.S. This was a statement victory, and I will 100% be on board. I might even be a U.S. citizen by the next time it comes around. So it's pretty cool. I'd say I get a tattoo of it, but I already do, so it's fine. Let's reconvene in a little bit. We'll talk apparel. Good luck at the Morgan Cup coming up, I believe, next weekend for you. Super exciting. We'll have you back on to talk about that a little bit too. All of you out there, if you are playing golf this weekend in a state that is going to aerate in about 5 to 7 days, play well, have fun, roll a couple extra putts, because you will kick yourself in 2 weeks if you don't. Take care. I'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.